Turn with me in your Bibles, please, for our second reading to 2 Samuel chapter 19. Second Samuel chapter 19, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. And it was told Joab, "Behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people. For the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. And the people got them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face and cried with a loud voice, 'O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son.' And Joab came into the house to the king and said, 'Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters and the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Now therefore arise, go forth, and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night, and that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now.' Then the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told unto all the people, saying, 'Behold, the king doth sit in the gate,' and all the people came before the king, for Israel had fled every man to his tent. And all the people were at strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'The king saved us out of the hand of our enemies, and he delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines. And now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back?' And King David sent to Zadok and to Abiathar the priests, saying, 'Speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, Why are ye the last to bring the king back to his house, seeing the speech of all Israel is come to the king, even to his house? Ye are my brethren, ye are my bones and my flesh. Wherefore then are ye the last to bring back the king? And say ye to Amasa, Art thou not of my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab.' And he bowed the heart of all the men of Judah, even as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word unto the king, 'Return thou and all thy servants.' So the king returned and came to Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to conduct the king over Jordan. And Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, was of Bahurim, hasted and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. And there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. And they went over Jordan before the king. And there went over a ferry boat to carry over the king's household, and to do what he thought good. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was come over Jordan. And the king said unto the king, Let not my lord impute iniquity unto me, neither do thou remember that which thy servant did perversely the day that my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, that the king should take it to his heart. For thy servant doth know that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I am come the first this day, and all of the house of Joseph, to go down to meet my lord the king. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, "Shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" And David said, "What have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah, that ye should this day be adversaries unto me? Shall there any man be put to death this day in Israel? For do not I know that I am this day king over Israel?" Therefore the king said unto Shimei, "Thou shalt not die." And the king sware unto him. And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, and had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes, from the day the king departed until the day he came again in peace. And it came to pass, when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, "Wherefore wentest thou not with me, Mephibosheth?" And he answered, "My lord, O king, my servant deceived me, for the servant said, 'I will saddle me an ass that I may ride thereon and go to the king, because thy servant is lame.' And he hath slandered thy servant unto my lord the king, but my lord the king is as an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king, yet thou didst set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right therefore have I yet to cry any more unto the king?" And the king said unto him, "Why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, 'Thou and Ziba, divide the land.'" And Mephibosheth said unto the king, "Yea, let him take all, for as much as my lord the king is come again in peace unto his own house." And Barzillai the Gileadite came down from Rogelim and went over Jordan with the king to conduct him over Jordan. Now, Barzillai was a very aged man, even 80 years old, and he had provided the king sustenance while he lay at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man. And the king said unto Barzillai, "Come thou over with me, and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem." And Barzillai said unto the king, "How long have I to live that I should go up with the king unto Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old. And can I discern between good and evil? Can thy servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any more the voice of singing men and singing women? Wherefore then should thy servant be yet a burden unto my lord the king? Thy servant will go a little way over Jordan with the king, and why should the king recompense me with such a reward? Let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again, that I may die in mine own city and be buried in the grave of my father and of my mother. But behold, thy servant Kimham, let him go over with my lord the king to do to him what shall seem good unto thee." And the king answered, "Kimham shall go over with me, and I will do to him that which seem good unto thee, and whatsoever thou shalt require of me, that will I do for thee." Or unto thee. Right? No, for thee, excuse me. And all the people went over Jordan, and when the king was come over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned unto his own place. Then the king went on to Gilgal, and Kimham went on with him. And all the people of Judah conducted the king, and half the people of Israel. Also, and behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said unto the king, "Why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over Jordan?" And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, "Because the king is near of kin to us. Wherefore then be ye angry for the matter? Have we eaten at all of the king's cost, or hath he given us any gift?" And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, "We have 10 parts in the king, and we have also more right in David than ye. Why then did ye despise us, that our advice should not be first had in bringing back our king?" And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. So the civil war between Absalom and David is over. In the last chapter, Absalom was slain. This is where we pick up the narrative here. And David's response to the slaying of Absalom, and we have Joab's wise counsel to the king. I do think it is wise counsel. Now, there are several things that are important that we see here. First, let us see Joab's loyalty. Right? Joab's loyalty. Sagacious as he is, wise as he is, looking over the nation, looking over the soldiers that were with them, it is pretty clear to Joab that if David has this mindset of mourning for Absalom, such that all the people now that were with him in the battle are ashamed of their victory, that David will lose them. David will lose their loyalty. And so Joab then, out of loyalty to David, speaks a word in the king's ear. He has the kind of relationship with the king such that he is able to offer such correction, and he does offer it. A lesser man, perhaps, would have feared the consequences, but he feared even greater consequences should David's mind not be changed. Now, it's an interesting thing also in that he has directly defied the order of David to spare Absalom's life, and yet he is bold to continue forward and to speak to the king in this way. This tells us something about Joab that is, well, it's one of those qualities that folks sometimes have, or maybe it comes and goes, that can be harnessed for good or for evil, right? That kind of confidence, that kind of boldness can be harnessed for good, but then often it can lead into evil. I think here it is being harnessed for good, although I would say that Joab does speak very directly to the king, and it does not seem like he speaks very respectfully to him. So while we like the content of what Joab has to say, and even the loyalty of Joab coming to David, the way he addresses his king, I think, is not respectful. And so he is to be faulted for that. Notice what he says to David, the wonderful, wise things that he says. You love your enemies more than your loyal subjects and your friends. Okay, remember the example of God. Yes, he does have a particular kindness even to his enemies, but he loves his people more than he loves his enemies. The Bible even in certain instances says that the Lord hates the wicked and those who are his enemies. So the example of the Lord is to distinguish between those who are his enemies and those who are his friends. David had been delivered by the Lord of a threat to his life and had several in assistance. Right? Thousands came to his side, and now he has made them ashamed. That is unjust. He should not have done that. You have no regard for the lawful obedience of your people, and you favor instead a lawbreaker. Again, wise counsel. David acts as a public person here. He cannot let his personal loss work in such a way that it overcomes his public persona as the leader of the nation. This is his responsibility. You have made the doers of good ashamed of their well-doing. This is something that we never want to do. We don't want anyone ever at our hand to be ashamed of doing good. We want at every turn to encourage that which is good. Whenever someone has said to you something along the lines of, well, that's a goody-two-shoes way of looking at things, don't take that as an insult. Take that as a compliment. And remember to speak to them about encouraging one another to that which is good. David discouraged their well-doing that day and made them ashamed of it. That's an evil thing to do. And then note also the action of a king, that it is a declaration. It is not a good declaration. Right? When the king acts, even though he is not given some kind of proclamation based on the war, his actions speak for him. And so let's remember that Joab rightly rebukes the declaration that David made without speech, but with his actions. Okay, and let's remember also that often we may proclaim something without words. We may proclaim without words. All right, so that's the first section. We also want to remember of David the greatness of his heart against his enemy, Absalom. And yes, surely we have some blood relation there and so some natural affection. And yet, David did not rise up in hatred against his son who sought his life. Remember what David said, "Would God I had died instead of thee." So David does have a great heart here, although we do think it goes beyond its proper bounds. We want to commend where we can. Secondly, notice that he is humble. He accepts Joab's rebuke. It would have been right for him to say, "You know, get out of here. Get out of my presence. What are you doing assaulting me with these words while I'm in mourning for my son? Leave." But David is encouraged to his duty by the receipt of Joab's comments to him, and humbly he accepts them. And that's another good example on the part of David. And then third, he took Joab's good counsel, even though it was given in a disrespectful way. My dear brothers and sisters, let's not let the imperfection of the messenger sully the message. I would ask for your special grace for me every week on that account. But still, there are other times in our lives where we don't want to take the imperfection of the messenger to spoil a good message. Remember that David could have had much vehemence against Joab because he killed his son, and yet he did not. All right, so the second section, I have that as verses 9 through 15. There are still the remnants of rebellion and uncertainty in the nation. This is just a very real narrative that we have here, right? There's confusion among the people. We followed Absalom. Now he's dead. What are we going to do? We don't know what to do. What is happening here? What are these circumstances, and how ought we to pursue? What is our duty here? And so the people of the nation have the right kind of understanding. And this strife happens all through the tribes of Israel. So there are still remnants of rebellion and uncertainty. It was necessary, therefore, that the tribe of Judah come forth first to acknowledge David's authority and office. And so David sends to them, speaks not of their rebellion in following Absalom, but that he is their bone and flesh. In other words, all is forgiven. Come, conduct me over Jordan. Bring me into the nation. Help me take the throne back. And, David could have come by force of arms. And so we see David's peaceable nature here. Although he is a bloody man and a man of war, he comes back into the nation recognizing that it was a civil war that had taken place, where brother had risen up against brother. And so, in coming back then, he ought to come back as peaceably as possible, and so he does. And so first he solicits Judah. And then he does so on a personal level too, not just on a tribal level, but then he turns to Amasa. And he says to Amasa, "You are also my bone and flesh. You will be the leader of my forces instead of Joab." And so we have Joab's demotion. Really, Joab is put into some state of limbo. We'll see a little bit later that he refuses to go away. But Joab is relieved of his position as the leader of David's army. And Amasa instead, who had taken up arms against David before, now he will be the captain of David's host. Okay, so we see David acting very, very peaceably here. He's saying, all is forgiven. Come and join me as we put our nation back together. And so the men of Judah then did show their support. They came out to conduct him home from Gilgal. Okay, so now we move on to the next section. I have that as verses 16 through 23. And we have some loose ends to clean up. The first is Shimei. And so notice then the kindness and the favor that David receives. Someone sets up a ferry boat to bring David and his family back over Jordan. Okay, so in other words, they're welcoming him. Judah has gone out to meet him, but who's in front of Judah? Shimei. Shimei with 1,000 men of Benjamin. Now that might have been perceived as a threat, but I'm thinking that they did not come with arms. They did not come in battle array. They came in such a way so that they might be there with Shimei to be received into favor with him. And so, because they are of the same tribe of Benjamin, they come with Shimei, who had, in a sense, taken the lead of the tribe of the Benjamites from whose house Saul was, in cursing David. So now Shimei comes, and he wanted to be the first to greet David back and to confess his sin. Thy servant has done wickedly, perversely, twistedly, literally. That's what the original has. So we note his confession of sin is humbling himself before the king. The measures he takes to show a genuine repentance, he meets the king at the border, he falls down in humility before him, and he makes a full confession of his sin, calling his actions perverse and crooked. Notice Abishai, always among the sons of Zeruiah, there should be an occasion for violence here, right? We can't miss this occasion, can we? David says, what have I to do with thee, thou sons of Zeruiah? I know that I am king. This man poses no threat. And so he turns to Shimei and he swears to him that he will not die, that he will not suffer capital punishment upon David's return. This is not a day of vengeance, but a day of forgiveness, a day of patching things back together, not a day of further division, in other words. Okay, so then we have another Benjamite that shows up even closer to Saul, and that is his grandson Mephibosheth. And this is an interesting circumstance. You remember what happened. Ziba came out and said, well, the reason Mephibosheth isn't with me is because he was hoping that he'd be king now. Mephibosheth comes, and it's obvious from the inspired writer here that he has not dressed himself at all. He's been in a kind of mourning since David was driven from Jerusalem. So he hasn't washed, he hasn't changed his clothes, he hasn't trimmed or cut his beard or looked in a mirror and made himself, presentable. He hasn't done any of that. It's obvious that he has been in mourning, in utter affliction since David was chased out of the city. And so he has a different story from that of Ziba. Ziba came and you know what he did? He deceived you. He slandered me before you. I didn't say that. That was not my hope. I was waiting for him to bring my mule so I could come with you. But he never came back. And he went out and he said all those nasty things about me. And so I just want you to know that I was always for you and your reign. But I have nothing to say to the king. I am, if I can paraphrase a bit, I'm like a dead dog. I'm like a flea. All of my father's house should have been killed a long time ago for their rebellion. But that you brought me to your own table and sat me and fed me there, I have no right to ask for anything else. Do whatever you seem best. Do whatever you think is best. And so, David says to him, why do you prattle on about your matters? Don't worry about that. Like I said, you and Ziba, you can divide the inheritance. Everything's fine. Notice that David refuses to make a judgment in the matter. I think on two accounts. The first account is what? It's a day of peace. A day of bringing together. Secondly, there's no sure word on that. There are no witnesses. It's one man's word against one man's word. And so you can't really make a decision there. All right, and then we have Barzillai, the Gileadite, in verses 31 through 39. Oh, for a friend like Barzillai. But how about this? Oh, to be a friend like Barzillai. Right? And so David says to him, Barzillai, come on back to Jerusalem with me. I'll make you a very comfortable man. I'll take care of you there. And Barzillai says, I'm 80 years old. I'm 80. Number one, it's a long trip. Number two, I've got a grave back home waiting for me. My own land, where my mother and father are buried. Third, can I hear singing men and women? Can I really taste food anymore? Like I used to? Can I really enjoy the things that you can offer me? Now, I think that those latter things about the enjoyments, I think that's just his way of being polite. I think what he's saying is, I'm 80 years old and I belong with my people in Gilead and back in Rogelim. And so that's where I desire to die. But if you want to do my house good, if you want to requite us, take my main servant here, Kimham. Take him instead and do all that you would do to me, to him. Make him that kind of comfortable man that you wanted to make me. And David says, all right, I'll do that. I'll do whatever you tell me he needs. But secondly, whatever it is that you say that you need, I'll take care of that too. You're not going to keep me back from offering you the kindness in return for the offering of kindness that you brought to me in the wilderness. So we see that David is a man who receives nothing for free, right? And then finally, in verses 40 through the end of the chapter, we have a completely different tone. We might even want to say that these last few verses belong perhaps more to chapter 20 than chapter 19. So the Israelites, they rise up and they say to the Judahites, meh, meh, meh. They begin whining out of jealousy. We have 10 parts in David. You're only one tribe. Why do you get to take the king back into Jerusalem? We wanted to take the king back into Jerusalem. Just because we're late. And so, it's an interesting comment on behalf of the inspired prophet here that writes, first of all, the Judahites say this, have we gotten any advantage out of this? Did David feed us in the wilderness? Why are you so stirred up to jealousy? Is it because you got out on some, you were left out on some gift? So notice, those are not very kind words that the Judahites offer back to the rest of Israel. But secondly, notice that it says at the end of the chapter that the words of the Judahites were more fierce than the word of the Israelites. How did they win the argument that day? They simply shouted them down. Instead of coming together reasonably, instead of coming together to reason together, to come to some kind of understanding where everyone could perhaps save a little face, everyone could come together, not following the example of their king, who throughout this chapter has been all about doing that after he heard the word from Joab. Instead of that, they begin this division that will come to its full manifestation just two generations down the road in Rehoboam, when the kingdom will be divided. Notice these seeds are already at work here. Okay? So there's lots of lessons to learn from that, right? Seeds of division sown, if not rooted up, will most often bear their wicked fruit. The way to win an argument is not by shouting someone down. It's not by being more vehement or more violent. It's not how we ought to be settling things. We ought to be settling things by coming together, speaking peaceably to one another. Just like Joab commanded David, or not commanded, but suggested to David that he speak comfortably to them. Literally in the Hebrew, whenever you see that, like in Isaiah 40, speak comfortably to my people. That means speak to their hearts. That's the literal understanding. So then, at the end of chapter 19 here, we see the seeds of strife and division that they may have been sown quite a little while back. And now they're only being inflamed by the shouting down of one another. Finally, Judah prevails. And so in the next chapter, then, we're going to see that there is yet another battle for the nation. All right, thus ends the reading of 2 Samuel chapter 19. Let's stay.